For December the 1st, 2017, we talk about Cuphead. That time, Epic Games decided to sue a teen. And we ask you which game deserves a VR adaptation. Welcome to Level 221. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Meismith.
I'm Jala Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Real sorry we missed last week. It was Thanksgiving here in America.
Wave of turkeys.
Yes, they overtook us. It was like the plot for the South Park game on PlayStation. I feel
except not.
Yeah, except not. Yeah. No.
I was gonna go with like West of Loathing, except with turkeys.
Oh yes, instead of the cows. Yeah. It's I feel bad missing multiple episodes in a row like that.
Well, that's okay, because people can totally listen to Dark Insight episode 83, which was the episode that I was just on that dropped yesterday as of the day that we are recording. So go listen to that, darkinsight.net. Woo! You can listen to me totally derail everything and then valiantly try to bring it back. I actually do get everybody back on track a couple of times.
You took responsibility for taking them off track.
I did, but I also talked about some really cool games that I'm not going to be talking about on the level. Just to give you names, it is Kiai Resonance, which is a cool samurai fighting game. And Burly Men at Sea, which is a badass little adventure game. Mm-hmm. And then Castlevania the Dracula X Chronicles, which I know I mentioned briefly on the show. Yeah. But I actually finished it, so I talked about it there.
Oh, cool. You played that on your PS Vita?
Yes.
Cool.
So yeah, that's a thing you can go listen to. So go listen to it.
Do
Yay.
It. Yeah.
Yay.
In the interim, Ben, you had a birthday.
Yeah. I did.
Yeah.
And you had a birthday.
Yes, I did. We both we both had birthdays.
You leveled up.
Yeah, turn 30.
I've just resolved not to have those anymore.
Yeah.
You had your 9th anniversary of your 21st birthday.
Yep.
Yeah. No. Somebody at work asked me if I feel any different. I'm like, my insurance rates are probably going to go down. Yeah, so whatever.
Driving insurance goes down, the medical insurance goes up.
Womp womp.
You know,
there's balance in the universe.
I think I'm about the only person on this entire network that doesn't give a fuck how old I am.
No,
like I really don't. I could care less. And you know what? I'm like, you know what, bitches? I'm in better shape than all y'all. So shut up.
Yeah, no. I don't want to sound morose about it. It's just not a big deal. Like the 30th
well,
birthday
like,
thing. No, I mean, that's just how I am generally. No.
I'm just worried. I'm like counting down the days until I need knee replacements. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, eventually you're gonna upload your consciousness. It'll be fine.
Right.
Thank you for the game that you gave to me, Ben, for the silver case.
Yeah. Perhaps it'll show up on a grind soon.
Yeah. I'm on a bit of a visual novel kick, which we're going to talk about on the grind a little bit later on.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
oh, yeah.
I suppose both of us are, aren't we? Yeah,
yeah. Mine wasn't a visual novel; it's an adventure game, but like that.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking about visual novels, I have to say this thing. So, you know, I talk about games on my Facebook page and everywhere else, but on Facebook in specific. Chris Schley talks to me about things. He happened to tag me in updates about Doki Doki Literature Club, which is a visual novel.
Oh, that looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's when I need assignment to set aside a night to play. Yeah.
So he's like, I want to recommend this to you because your table flippings are so fun to listen to. And I'm like, damn it, Chris, just because you recommend a game doesn't mean I'm ever going to touch it. Hell, you know, people have bought me games that are in my backlog and I feel bad about it, but they're there because like time, you know, and like convenience. So
yeah.
I told him that I was officially going to be flipping a table onto him. And Cole, there's nothing you can do to stop me. I'm flipping this table over on Chris.
Hey, I only get upset when you flip tables because I at one point say, oh, I played this thing. And then you play and like, I didn't like thing.
Yeah, well, I didn't even play this game. It's just the fact that he's like, I'm going to recommend it to you. I'm going to, like, as if that's the magic button to make me, like, play the thing.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't.
Yeah. No, it's not. not how it works.
Enjoy his updates, the degree to which he has become resigned to, like, the crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty great, like, you know, seeing his updates as he just, like, his tolerance or his whatever is just, like, you know, decaying over time. I don't know. You know,
but decaying as the game does. Yeah,
well, the thing that I seem to be hearing, though, is that not just Chris, but all these other people, they just want a Jala version of abject suffering or something, but I don't get paid enough for that, dude.
Abject table flipping.
Yeah. No, sometime here I'm going to talk about Doki Doki Literature Club, because it is something that I am genuinely curious to see. People talk about it as a game that has a twist, and I want to see what that twist is. I've had to eyes glaze over at Chris's updates.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and see, like, other people whose opinions that I trust have said that it is a decent game. Mm-hmm. Like, not like ta best ever, but, you know, a pretty decent game.
It's also free.
Yeah, and that's another thing that was brought up. It's free, you can play it. Well, first off, I like to play these mobile.
Uh-huh.
You know, like on a thing that I can just, like, lay down in bed.
Yeah,
so there's your first thing.
If I could pay $10 to play that on the PS Vita or the Switch, then that would be an entirely different story. That would have been beaten and dissected ages ago.
Yeah.
So Steam is actually recommending it to me based on my recent playtime in other gore games.
Yeah.
And I have no idea. Yeah. Like, for one thing, that's generally not my jam. And for another,
I mean, all the time you spend in Warframe.
I suppose so. I was thinking, it zeroing in on my Mac, but I guess it's the same account, because I'm like, Macs cannot handle, like, enough graphical whatever to have gore.
Yeah, mine does. Come on. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So anyway, that was just a funny thing. And the thing is that, like, a game that is a dating sim sort of thing that has a twist and gets crazy. Mm-hmm. Hey, what do you think Hatoful Boyfriend was? And I actually really liked that game. But then again, it started out being weird because it's full of pigeons.
I was going to say, which twist are you talking about?
Yeah, there are a handful.
Yeah. Oh, I know. That whole game is just crazy. So.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway. Yeah. So
I killed a listener. We can move on. What's going on for everybody else?
You dropped the table on them. Yeah, I don't know. I just we were talking about Thanksgiving. David, did you do anything for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I went back home and visited family. So that was kind of fun. We wandered around Amish country some, so that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looked at some tables and cabinets.
Yeah, there's a place there called Lehman's Hardware that it's basically this just massive hardware store that caters to the Amish. So imagine if you had, like, a Cracker Barrel, except all of this stuff on the walls is in the store.
It's for sale. Okay.
Yeah. So, like, if they were selling, like, the old school, like, clothes washers that are like the tub with the roller to squeeze out water and mm-hmm. the washboard and stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. That roller is called a mangle.
Yes.
just a funny thing to say.
Is that a verb as well, to use that thing?
I think it's if you misuse it, definitely. That's cool. Yeah. Anybody else have any cool stories before we get on to the episode?
There was the Steam sale as well, which maybe we can talk about that later, but
yeah,
that was another thing that happened while we were away.
Yeah, no, I can't remember if I bought anything. I think I went to a fugue state. No, I really don't think I did.
It's Blackout Friday.
Yeah. No, I bought yeah, no, we can talk about it later if it's one of our stories.
I'm seriously still eyeing Stardew Valley.
Do it. It's fun. It's a very good game. I mean, did you expect anything more?
No. I'm just that it is still calling to me. I'm trying to resist its, you know, unwholesome promise of, you know, small time values and
I feel like we're segueing from playing games to talking about playing games.
Yeah, we probably ought to.
According to Steam, you bought 8 things, Cole.
Oh, okay. How many of those are City Skyline things?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. That's weird.
I've since scrolled past.
Yeah, I made a couple of purchases last night because it was like I can't end the sale without buying something because I'm broken as a human. yeah. Cool. So just before we get into the show, I want to remind people we're coming up on Duckstream is coming up. So December 8th, 9th, and 10th between the let's call it Duckfeed West in Portland and Duckfeed East in a couple of places. Going to be streaming for 48 hours. I'm going to be playing Siren Blood Curse, which is a little let's just say kind of often ignored late era Konami horror game that's done in this cool kind of chapter format. And my shift goes from Saturday into Sunday.
Oh, nice. It'll be a late night stream.
Yeah, it'll be through the day.
I will be comatose probably because I have my marathon that morning. Yeah. So unless I happen to catch some sleep between things, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I usually watch you stream, so, you know.
Yeah. And I'm sure somebody will call out highlights and stuff if anything happens. If Brian Wade decides to do that again. He knows what he did.
That man. Yes, he knows.
Yeah. But yeah, go to duckfeed.tv and look for details on that. We're going to be putting up all of the schedule and stuff here shortly. But otherwise, we have the regular kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, what's this Fortnite story? Because I can't tell if I'm supposed to be irritated by this or not.
So, Epic Games, the dev behind Fortnite, is suing 2 14-year-olds for using software to cheat and gain a competitive edge in online multiplayer. First, they banned them back in October, but now they've decided to sue. One of the moms is actually fighting back and calling the whole thing into question. She's saying, first off, that there is no proof that her son modified the game. Second, that she never gave the required parental consent in the first place. And third, that the company never suffered a mass profit loss because the game is free. Epic says that the lawsuit came up because the defendant filed a DMCA counterclaim to a takedown notice on a YouTube video that exposed and promoted cheats and exploits for the game. Okay. And law requires that Epic file suit or drop the claim. So, essentially, the kid was live streaming himself playing the game using cheats that he downloaded. And their statement said, Epic is not okay with ongoing cheating or copyright infringement from anyone at any age. We take cheating seriously and we'll pursue all available options to make sure our games are fun, fair, and competitive for players. And the biggest thing is that they publicly named the 14-year-old in question, which is legal.
Yeah.
Not legal.
Throw the shit out. That shouldn't happen.
Yeah. And then also they are requesting financial gain that the kid made, but the mom said that he didn't make any money live streaming like most people don't.
Of course he didn't.
Yeah. So, yeah, but they're trying to, like, get money out of the kid and the mom, and they publicly named the kid.
Okay, so first off, the kid's a shit for cheating at a game because that's a dumb, stupid waste of effort. Epic is totally in the wrong. Well, no, okay. The DMCA is the fucked up thing here, but Epic needs to
just in general.
Yeah, Epic needs to choose a goddamn lane because they need to say, like, well, we're doing this because we have to, or, well, we take cheating seriously at any age. The fact that they named a minor in their suit, be it civil or criminal, that shouldn't be. This needs to have the plug pulled on it.
Yes. So yeah, I came across that and I'm like, oh, that's a thing that that's a mess is what that is. All of that's a mess. Oh,
do you think EA paid Epic to do this to take the heat off of them?
Right. Oh man. Well, yeah. Like actually EA, we were talking about it in much more detail on Dark Insight, but like, the state rep of Hawaii is like, you know, trying to take EA to task, and they're like, you know, saying that the loot boxes and stuff are gambling and that it's, you know, issue for kids and a bunch. Yeah. And so like it was a whole thing. But you can listen to Dark Insight for that conversation. Yeah. But
that's
EA's
only
still
this...
in hot water. Yeah.
The Hawaii representative is only the American version of that. There's a ton of discussion about loot boxes happening over in the UK.
Especially I don't know, maybe this is just going to be obvious, but you know, targeting them at kids is kind of a problem.
Yeah. It's no good. This is me doing the no good emoji kind of gesture, crossing
Wait,
my arms.
Is a no good emoji?
Yeah. It's like a woman who's like crossing her arms and a big X in front of her. It's strangely enough, it is a very good emoji. No good, comma, very good. So is a DMCA takedown really the only mechanism that they have? Can't they just issue a cease and desist?
I have no idea to be honest. I have no idea if they had a different route that they could have gone with that, or if it's just like that is the one channel that they had and you know, they're just fighting it. I don't know.
Also,
a cease and desist won't help with the video that's already out there, right?
I mean, the cease and desist, I believe, and I could be talking out of my ass, so who knows, I believe that it might apply to say like, hey, take this thing down as well.
Whenever there's a claim, I think, on a video on YouTube, it automatically takes it off of like YouTube.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's one of the big problems with the DMCA.
Yeah.
Things is people will abuse that very fact.
Yeah. So when I say that they need to pick a lane, also when they say like that when that statement like people infringing our copyright and also cheating and stuff, like, so are you also suing because somebody streamed your game? Because guess what?
Yeah.
As a multiplayer shooter with crafting, like streaming is your only thing. Like you have to have streaming. Why would you discourage that?
Yeah.
And really, like, their response is all over the place. And the mom's, you know, points about, well, this and this and this and this, you know, like she's got multiple points, you know, solid points there. And maybe, you know, Epic might have solid points, except that they're just kind of throwing a bunch of different things out there. Right.
I do have to say, although it sounds like, you know, Epic's taking this too far, like hacking a game is still a big time dick move.
Oh, for sure, but a dick move isn't necessarily illegal.
It seems like they already did the correct move, which was, like, ban their accounts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But anything beyond that seems like overkill.
Yeah. Well,
although if they, you know, if it is the situation that, you know, they were legally obligated or whatever, I mean, that's...
Right.
Here's the thing. Like, if the kid downloaded this off of somewhere on the internet, what they need to be doing is finding where that cheat came from and then going after those people. Like, that's what they need to do. I mean, the video, you take down the video, but if that cheat's still out there, guess what? Somebody else is going to make one and you're going to be chasing your tail around. It's stupid. Why don't you just go after the people who made the thing in the first place?
Yeah.
Or patch your
lean
game.
Lean into it.
Like,
I remember in Halo, you could, with the modded games, you could, like, make a gun that fired vehicles, and that's cool. Like, you can make that fun.
Yeah. They should totally just mod their game, you know, and they're walking straight, you know, face first right into the Streisand effect as well. You know, they're drawing attention. They're drawing attention to this very exploit. Like none of this is a good move, even if it is triggered by this compulsory DMCA thing.
Yeah.
You know.
And let us not remember that the game is kind of shit anyway.
Well, you've played so much of it.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
No judgment.
So all you have to do there is say, and I should know.
Sometimes you hate the game. It's a thing.
Yeah.
It could be so good, though, if they weren't idiots.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like that idiocy is extending into other stuff.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Well, don't worry. Very soon, the government will make sure that none of us will be able to stream.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Forgot about like that. Unless you pay the extra.
How can you forget?
Anyway, so any other like thoughts about this story? Like, this is categorically dumb.
Yeah, it's just dumb.
Yeah.
Kind of brings up some good points, though, where it's like there's friction between game developers and streaming because it's kind of a revenue stream that they're not a part of exactly yet. So,
yeah. Like the effects are secondary, or the positive effects are secondary for the developers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do kind of want to know how Fortnite keeps getting back in the freaking news.
I mean, probably because they keep fucking stuff up.
I guess.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ben, speaking of online shooter kind of things,
got ports on ports.
Good.
Yeah, so the first port story is they're porting PUBG to mobile, and the reason why this is a somewhat big deal is this will be how they launch it in China, which will be a huge market for them. That's about it. I don't know.
Player Unknown's Battlegrounds, in case people don't know what PUBG is. Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know how the controls are going to work for it, like in terms of like shooting and turning around and stuff. So that'll be interesting. I mean, this is kind of akin to the same conversation about how The Witness will work on an iPad. I have no idea. So,
Did we do the story where I think it was last week? It came out that they've stated that for the Chinese release, they're going to modify the game in order to align with socialist values.
Yeah, that was mentioned in the article as well. It says Tencent said it would ensure that PUBG reflects socialist core values, Chinese traditional culture, and moral rules.
Yeah, that might be some boilerplate that he needed to do, because I know for games when they're taken to China, they have to remove a lot of like references to the undead. I wonder if it is just something along those lines. I don't know that it would actually like change the structure of the game really at all.
Yeah.
To be fair, like the game already pretty explicitly doesn't make sense from like any sort of story standpoint.
Yeah, well, and also I don't think that PUBG necessarily reflects an ethos either, so it's hard for me to say like we're taking the, you know, profound statements that Player Unknown's Battlegrounds is making now for the West, and making it equally as profound in this other direction for a different market. I don't know.
Like, how can you fit 100 people in that plane?
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense, no matter where it is, no matter what version.
And why do they have to jump out of the plane to fight one another? Why can't they just fight one another on the plane?
Yeah.
Some questions.
So I wonder if the mobile port is mostly I really wish I knew anything about China. it has anything to do with just the fact that phones are A, powerful, and B, ubiquitous, probably more so than desktop PCs are anymore in China.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably part of why they're doing both of these things. But,
seems smart.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Add that to the list of games of that'll be interesting to see how it gets played. Uh-huh. But we may never find out. Port number two story, which is that they're making Desert Bus for VR. So
yes,
I know everyone was waiting for this. So for those of you who don't know about this, Desert Bus is a game that I believe Pendulette and Teller made as a series of games where you drive from Tucson, Arizona to Las Vegas in real time on in a desert. I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
The bus has bad alignment, so you have to just constantly steer the bus in the right direction so it doesn't go off the road.
Yeah.
It's 8 hours in real time, and there's no pause menu. if you mess up, then you get towed back in real time. So. Game to deliberately hurt you or troll you.
How does that not end up on abject suffering?
I mean, just because it's one of those things that's been covered a lot. Like, people do this as a marathon for charity. Like, Desert Bus for Hope is a thing. Ben, you're making it sound like nothing happened in this game. Several hours in, a bug hits the windshield.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot about it. I didn't want to spoil that for anybody who's going to play it.
So. Sorry.
Sorry. Some features that they added for the VR is you can move a hand and you can interact with the air freshener of the car.
Oh, boy.
You can honk the horn now with the car. They also have updated it so it supports multiplayer now. So a person with VR can sit in the passenger seat. Huh. And they can wave at you. You can throw pieces of paper at you. This is really a technical overhaul.
I don't think they might be gilding the lily a bit much. I think that they're betraying the essential purity of Desert Bus.
And then one thing I didn't know is that Gearbox was one of the developers for this game way back in the day. It was developed by Dinosaur Games and published by Gearbox Software. Sorry, so this is the current version, the VR version of it. We'll do that.
The current version. That didn't make any sense because the original version was Imagineering. Like, that was the people who did like the Home Alone games and stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that was for the Sega CD, but it was unreleased. So it was kind of infamous for a while, and then it got leaked onto the internet when emulation hit the point where they could.
Wait, which did? Desert Bus?
The game that Desert Bus was a part of, Penn & Teller's Smoke and Mirrors, which is a video game full of, like, broken bad video games that you trick your friends into playing.
If you trick someone into playing and completing Desert Bus, good on you. Like that.
You have the most patient and most tolerant friend.
Yeah.
That you're almost there.
This is neat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. I've got a story, and this is more of a warning to people than anything else, because the online services for Demon Souls are on Death Watch. So Sony has announced that as of February 28th, 2018, in Japan, they're basically pulling the plug on the servers that run the game's kind of online side. So things related to kind of the group world tendency and any kind of online play. Notably, there's a boss in Demon Souls that summons somebody in to fight you. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is going to go away, and it will be a single player only game. And also you're going to lose the rankings and stuff like that. You're going to lose the little soapstone messages and things. And there's an update since I dropped this into the story. It was thought that Atlas, who handles the servers in the West, were going to keep it going. Like, nobody really knew what was going to go on. Turns out Atlas is taking down the servers for the worldwide distribution on February 28th as well. So Demon Souls is going away. It's not going away. That particular side of it is going away early on next year.
I wonder if this is something that they'll be able to do any sort of fan servers for or anything.
I don't know. The fact that it's solely on PlayStation 3 actually makes me far less hopeful for that.
Is there no emulation for PlayStation?
They're working on it, but everything that I've seen is very low frame rate. Like, they're able to get, like, frames out of the, like, Resident Evil 4 port for it.
Mm.
Yeah. So,
how old is this game now? Is it about 10 years?
Just about. Yeah, it came out in 2009.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it wasn't going to stay up forever, and that's the problem with
that's like how Sony rolls, is they support something for 10 years and then they're done with it.
Right. They meant it when they said it would be a 10-year console cycle. Yeah. So I figured, you know, given how much it comes up in our multiplayer for some reason, people who like Souls would want to know about this if they didn't already. So maybe get that last playthrough in with all those.
Yeah, I was gonna say, the question is, can I beat it in that time?
I mean, it's a short game. It's shorter than Dark Souls.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, Dark Souls is like a 60-hour game. Demon Souls is like a 35, 40-hour game. It's like Bloodborne, huh. Bloodborne length.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't have a lot more to say about that besides, I've already done my playthrough recently for the show. So, I think I might be done.
As we go on.
Yeah, David, what's the story that you brought here?
Yeah, so this is kind of ended up being a series of stories. So Destiny was supposed to have a live stream showing off all of the nifty doodads for the update, the expansion that comes out in a week. But that got canceled, and to understand why, we're kind of gonna have to go back in time. So basically over the Turkey Day holiday, it kind of came out that the game for certain events in the game that reward you with a lot of experience, most notably they're like public quests that happen in the sort of overworld section of the game, the game didn't actually award you the amount of experience that it should have and that it said it was rewarding you with. And this is most relevant because after you reach max level, every time you get 80,000 experience, you get a loot chest.
Uh-oh.
And then... And so over the Turkey Day, they released a hotfix that basically removed all of those adjustments. And I believe they claimed that the adjustments also upped the amount of XP on things that took a long time, like PvP. But I don't know. I haven't heard much about that. Mm-hmm. But then there was another controversy a short time later when people found that although they were now giving out the increased amount of XP, with the same update, they had doubled the amount of XP you needed to get a loot chest. So yeah, this whole thing is kind of a problem.
So I'm sorry. Let me pick this back up again. They doubled the amount that they doubled the amount of experience that it took to get a loot chest, but they also didn't give you the double XP. So people only got a quarter of the progress that they thought they were going to get.
Well, no, what it was is originally you were getting a reduced amount of XP.
Mm-hmm.
But it took 80,000 XP to get a loot chest, and so they removed it so that you're now getting the full amount of XP you were supposed to for the events. Because I guess I should say previously it would give you like if you completed events in rapid succession, which was a pretty common way to play.
Mm-hmm.
It would give you the full amount for the first one and then start giving you less and less, even though the UI said you were still getting the same amount.
Weird.
And so they got rid of that, but they increased it so that now you needed 160,000 experience to get a loot chest. And also the UI still didn't update. Didn't display that. The UI still said you needed 80,000.
Okay, so people are upset because Bungie didn't communicate this kind of, I don't know about screw up, they didn't communicate these adjustments properly, and so they feel like they put in the work and didn't get the reward that they feel owed.
Well, and I think also the fact that they lied about it.
Okay.
You know, I think probably the bigger issue wasn't so much, I mean, it's problematic that these sorts of systems are in place because microtransactions are a problem, but it wouldn't have been that big of an issue if they had been upfront.
Okay, so microtransactions are in play here because you can just pay to get one of these boxes.
Yes.
And so people ascend, like, because of this, there is a dollar value that is attached to the work that people did, and also a misrepresentation of the price tag that people would have had to get. Okay.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I think the big issue was the fact that wasn't displayed there. Like, you know, when you completed the event, it would pop up and say, you know, plus 800 experience, and then only give you, I don't know, 400 experience.
Yeah.
And similarly, it's after they doubled it, it still said 80,000 to next level. So, you know, it appears that they were artificially, you know, making it appear, you know, or feel onerous to get these loot boxes.
Right. Okay. And so this has led a lot of people to being angry. What's this event that they canceled?
Yeah. So basically there's a DLC coming up, and they were supposed to do a stream where they would be showing off like the gear from it and new features and just, you know, just kind of a preview.
Just like regular promotional kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And it was suddenly canceled. I believe it was canceled today and the stream was supposed to be tomorrow. And they basically said that instead there's going to be a blog post. I forget the exact wording, but basically addressing player concerns or something.
Okay.
So, yeah. So that's just kind of the thing is, first that they, you know, kind of screwed up, and now they're apparently concerned about it enough to kind of suddenly be swerving into, damage control mode.
What could they do to make this right if we're taking off the table, having not screwed up in the first place? Like, people are going to be angry anyway, so what can they do?
Sure. I mean, I think the first issue would be, you know, to not keep having a broken leveling system. So, you know, probably, I don't know, at the very least, you know, make this system be transparent.
Okay.
I would say, you know, probably also, you know, the community as a whole has a lot of concerns with a lot of like kind of pseudo progression, pseudo quality of life issues with the game. You know, ranging from the fact that the, you know, the end game is extremely random, to, you know, the end game is basically non-existent if you're not in a clan.
Okay, so I mean, like, all this falls under the kind of purview of the way they can fix this is by having not made their game bad.
Well, no, I'd say the way they can fix it is by committing to fixing the problems that people have.
But I mean, that doesn't actually that doesn't actually address much of anything, because every problem they fix is going to create five others for people who like things the way they were.
I don't think so. I mean, I think very few of these problems are actually things that I think they're pretty much all things that are explicitly not in the player's best interest.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't play the game. I don't really participate in a community like this, so it's hard for me to get up an awful lot to say aside from, man, this is kind of dumb. I'm happy I don't play this and put myself into a position where I could feel burned by this potentially.
See, I would say, yeah, I mean, I would say I think kind of there's two issues here. One is, you know, they're doing a really bad job of, you know, addressing player concerns and, you know, maintaining community, you know, that sort of thing. And I'd say the other issue is that, you know, I think the mistakes they made are actually a pretty big deal. I mean, it's, you know, kind of what the stuff we talked about with like EA and loot boxes and stuff like that, like, you know, having hostile microtransactions is one thing. Overtly lying to people about hostile microtransactions is something completely different.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Right. If they straight up just like misrepresented what was going to happen off the back of this, I just, you know, I'm falling into that dude trap of trying to problem solve and think about like what will result in the fewest number of people being yelled at. And I look at the situation and I think, oh, people are always going to be yelling about this all the time.
See, I don't think so. I mean, I think what they really need to do is, you know, basically, you know, there's a lot of quality of life issues and in particular, like end game issues that I think are fixable, and they need to show a willingness to fix them. I think that's ultimately what the game needs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the inciting event also happened less than a week ago, and like this is kind of the first reaction that they've made to it. They can't fix the entire thing overnight.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think the issue though is I think this is to a certain degree a symptom of, you know, players have been upset with a lot of these things from, you know, even before the game was released, and there has kind of just been radio silence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to a certain degree this is kind of the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's to be said or what's to do.
Yeah.
People's behavior can change video game companies, but not the FCC's.
Yep.
I'd say, I mean, what's to do is basically what it always comes back to. Do it right.
Well, I mean, do it right, or like, I mean, what a lot of these discussions kind of come down to is always have done it right.
Yeah, but I feel like generally speaking, not when it comes to microtransactions, like that is something that you choose to do it wrong. Like that's completely on you.
Yeah.
And I would say like a fair number of the problems that, you know, people are upset about are probably, you know, reasonably on them. Mm-hmm. And at the very least, you know, not doing anything about them, or at least like saying, hey, we have plans to do stuff about them, like here's the things we want to address, is on them.
Games shouldn't be a service,
but they are.
Yeah, but they shouldn't be. This is like this problem sucks.
I don't know. Well, that gets into a whole other thing. Yeah, but ultimately, storytelling's always been a service.
I don't know. Yeah. I want to do multiplayer.
Yay!
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
I asked, what game really needs a VR version and why? And thanks to Michael P. for the question, although we were also talking about that on Dark Insight. So you can listen to last week's Dark Insight about that. We talked a little bit, but not a lot.
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with John, who says, Picross 3D seems like a good fit to me. Agreed. Man, I need to fire that back up.
I have never played a Picross. I don't know about it.
Picross is very good. To call it a puzzle is, I mean, yeah, they're puzzles, but they're a little bit like Sudoku insofar as it doesn't take an awful lot of like thinking around corners. It's mostly like a task that you do until you just unlock it. Like, you know, it is literally just a picture that is described by numbers. Like, I've been playing the shit out of the Picross game that Nintendo released on the Switch.
Yeah. What's it called?
Is it
Picross?
Yeah, just like Picross something or other. I forget. I don't know. I spent the time looking at the title. I look at them grids, them dots. Yeah, but 3D Picross seems like a good one. You turn the thing around in your hands. Yeah. Let's see. David, what does Jaden say?
Jaden says, Dishonored, without a doubt. I already play Dishonored for immersion, turning off the HUD and prompts. VR would be like a dream in the streets of Dunwall and Karnaca?
Karnaca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's where the second game takes place. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
I've got to say, I think probably my answer to this, at least in general, would be stealth games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be so fun. And then, like, in Dishonored, to blink around, that would also be fun.
Keep the puke bucket right by you.
I don't know. I know a lot of, or at least my understanding is, a lot of VR games actually use basically blink as your movement, just because it allows a way to, you know, not have to, you know, mess with the fact that you're not really moving, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah, you're right. I've heard about that. I guess I've never played it, so I don't know how fast they go. When I'm playing Dishonored, I'm blinking around and doing a lot of like shifting and turning anyway. So sure. I'm just imagining that sense of like dislocation combined with the rotation of my field of view would really kind of fuck me up a bit.
So you're saying you would not want to play Descent VR?
No. Oh.
He already has motion sickness issues without the VR. Come on.
I get motion sickness issues looking at paintings. Ben, what does Juan say? And if you can present this as a breathless list, then that would be just great to me.
All right. Juan says, Portal, Outlast, Dying Light, Wolfenstein 2, Destiny 2. With the exception of the last one, I feel like VR would add the perfect level of immersion. I'm not sure if they are possible of PC, but I'd like them on PSVR, like Fallout 4 VR is only on HTC Vive at the moment and makes me sad. Also, whatever happened to HoloLens? I got to try it at E3 once and never heard about it again. Though technically, I guess it is AR.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure that's still in development at Microsoft, but
they haven't announced that it's canceled. It just hasn't moved to consumer production. My worry with HoloLens is that it will be like Surface, where the really cool version of it that we see as this, you know, like with the Surface, it was this massive table that it's like you can play D&D on it, and it's used to show like interactive maps and stuff. Like that is a test, basically like an R&D case, and the actual version of the Surface that we got was like, here's a shitty iPad, I guess. I know people like their services. Please don't.
I was going to say,
yeah, I was going to say,
all the other iPads.
it's the service that a lot of people got is not nearly as cool as that tech demo version that we saw. I worry that's what's going to happen with HoloLens, because I think AR looks baller.
Yep.
Yeah. Way into it.
Probably doesn't make you motion sick.
Yep, because you're looking at a fucking table. Yeah.
Well, I mean, as long as they get the the point of focus is right.
Yes. Yep. I don't know. I know Apple's working on a bunch of AR stuff. Yeah. Jala, what does Franz say?
Franz says, Jurassic Park Trespasser, if they ever re-release it with all announced features, the game they promised would have been perfect for VR.
Yeah, and that gets the case if you've ever been curious what it's like to look down and see a pair of just bodacious big naturals, then Trespasser's for you. You know that, right? Like it's a game that, you know, like it models the entire body of the first person character, and that mostly manifests as like reaching out and grabbing stuff and doing like you rotate your arm and to spin this box. It's actually kind of neat. It was like way ahead of its time, but you checked your health by looking down at your character's breasts to see the heart tattoo on top of one of them. It was really gratuitous.
Wow.
I just know it had a super over the top sound effect system.
Yeah, it was like way over engineered.
Yeah, they basically had sound effects for like an impact on like a whole bunch of different materials and then would dynamically mix them. So like if you hit something made of wood against something made of metal, it would like figure out what that would sound like.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's yep, they would mix it up, which is like, you know, that's a thing in engines like Unreal and Half-Life have material sampling and stuff like that.
Yeah, the difference is those didn't come out what like a decade ago.
Like 20 years ago at this point. Trespasser was like 1998. Did a ton of stuff. It was a very strange game, very notable for a lot of technical implementations, but most people just remember it for the fact that your health meter rests atop a shelf of tit flesh. So
I see nothing wrong with this.
So Justin says Homeworld, with the ships as miniatures, depth perception would give players a sense of the battle space that simply wasn't possible before. Touch controls would also make giving orders in 3D intuitive and simple. Justin stole my answer. I don't really have a lot of affection particularly for Homeworld, but I love the idea not of playing a first person style game in VR, but looking down at a model or taking this higher perspective on a broader scene.
So is this, I'm taking it like a large scale, like space strategy game?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that I could see that being pretty cool.
It's actually super pretty. this is the late 90s hour. It was super impressive for the time that it came out.
So I just looked up the image of the Jurassic Park Trespasser heart tattoo thing.
Right.
Yeah, I just dropped it in the Slack. Yeah.
I mean, am I wrong?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that dinosaur's expression.
I know.
Hello,
right.
Show art.
I don't know. Today's UIs could learn a great deal from this.
Oh, it's so good. David, what does Michael say?
Just imagining, hey, my health bar's up here.
my mana bar's up here.
Yeah.
Right.
Armored Core. I think mech combat is well suited to VR. In addition, being able to aim with your face would simplify the controls a little. Something AC desperately needs. You know what, though? I'd sell for any Armored Core game, though. Eyes at you, FromSoft.
I will see your Armored Core, Michael, and I will raise you a steel battalion.
So is Armored Core at all related to the Mech Warrior series?
No.
Okay, similar idea?
Armored Core is to Mech Warrior what let's see here, like Ace Combat is to a more straight laced like style. Yeah, a little
like
bit
sim?
Like it's less semi, but like it's more about the story and also more about like hardcore mech customization.
Okay. And less about spending all your time micromanaging heat sinks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how you would manage the controller in of Steel Battalion while you're wearing the VR headset, but life finds a way.
Couldn't you just have the controller in your hands, or?
So Steel Battalion, you know what that is, right?
No.
That was the Xbox game that you're a mech pilot, but it's shipped in this gigantic Rock Band sized box. And it has just all kinds of like control panels and joysticks and foot pedals and stuff, like down to the point where if your mech was about to be destroyed, you had to flip the plastic cover off of the ejector button to eject, or your character would die a permadeath. Like there was a button to activate the windshield wipers on your mech.
Right.
Yeah. Stuff like that. So that's what I want to see in VR. Get on.
I could see that.
Yeah.
If hand tracking got good enough, I could see that working. Just have virtual buttons.
I'd really love to try one of those. Try the Vive or try the Oculus hand tracking ones. Not hand tracking, but their motion controllers. I slid by, you know, so just like every year they had a room with a bunch of VR stuff set up at PRG this year, but the wait to get in was a half hour, and I didn't want to leave the booth for that long for something so frivolous. So my I was ready to set aside my fear of I just saw you tweet that out, Jala. I was ready to set aside my fear of losing my eye to a ringworm, and it was still denied to me.
I feel like that is a booth or whatever that is explicitly inappropriate for a retro game expo.
Oh, it's extended beyond the beyond that purview, much like WoF itself. That's right. I've equated Watch Out for Fireballs with the biggest retro game show.
Seems plausible.
Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says Madden. It would be amazing to step into Brady's shoes and throw passes, avoid rushers, see things from the QB perspective, celebrate throwing touchdowns, and feel what it's like to get sacked and hit about 15 times a game. Mm. Okay, maybe not the last one.
Nice try, Blanco Nino.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, they could just have, you know, your controller start randomly shaking. That's more or less what it's like to get sacked and hit it 15 times a game.
Yeah, this is a good idea. I would very much like that. But I'm boring, so I would say, like, take that, but also make it a golf game.
Tiger Woods, where it doesn't have a ball cam anymore. You just hit the golf ball and see it sail off into the distance.
Yeah, then you have to go find it.
Yeah. You sit in a cart and drive around for a while. Yeah.
I feel like, yeah, there's been a couple of open world golf games, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That should be Penn and Teller's next game.
Battles? Do you have, like, battles and stuff on the way to find your golf ball?
We're describing the Aqua Teen Hunger Force golf game for the PS2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Jala, what does David say?
David says, Metroid Prime. The game is already in the right POV and having things like the scans pop up as a transparent UI element instead of a menu screen could make that slightly less of a disruptive gameplay element.
Yeah. But you're still reading that boring-ass scan text. Shots fired. It's been 4 years, but I'm still angry. And so are you now. Yeah, no, Metro Prime would be a good one. It would be very fun to wander around those worlds doing that. Agreed. Roop says, Assassin's Creed games. I can't handle VR so well, but the views you could experience in these games would actually be breathtaking.
Leaping into a haystack would also be breathtaking. Would take your breath away.
Yeah.
I was thinking more... Though, like, wouldn't that mean I'd spend half the game staring at a wall from, like, a foot away as I climb?
That's more about, like, crowd stealth.
As you climb up, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're actually right. Sorry, shit. I was thinking about, like, oh, like, peeking around the corners and stuff. No.
I could see the crowd stealth, actually. Or going off of that, actually, like, a Hitman game could be pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I could see like any crowd stealth game I could see being pretty really good. Or like the Assassin's Creed multiplayer would be really awesome.
Into it. Yeah. Let's see. David, what does Charles say?
Charles said, I just talked to Jala about the roller coaster game in Final Fantasy VII?
Yep, VII.
Okay, I cannot do Roman numerals. Pro tip. Just like the Rush of Blood VR game. Also, The Room could be a fun game in VR. Isn't The Room that, like, crappy indie movie?
Is referring to...
The Room, what is...
Puzzle game.
The puzzle game that I played all the puzzles, you know, all of the rooms, and I'm just like, you know, I was alright with it. I was alright enough with it because puzzles that I played it all. Yeah. But I was like, the hell with this game. I don't even know what the hell they're trying to do with this. There's like a attempt at narrative here, but damn it. But anyway, yeah, I would totally be down for like the Gold Saucer in Final Fantasy VII being a VR thing. I would be digging it.
GSG, Gold Saucer Games.
Yeah.
Oh man, I was about to just disconnect you to make your voice sound better, but then you immediately sounded better. Can you talk for me more?
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. I will keep talking about nothing.
Yeah, you were sounding like you were on the other side of like a bad phone line there for a second. We're fine. We don't need to cut. We're leaving this in so people can know. and also because...
Damn it.
Don't worry. I know you're so close. You're so close to getting better internet.
Yes, I'm trying.
Yeah, I know. Don't worry. I'm not giving you shit. Yeah. Man, so the roller coaster game in Final Fantasy VII is like a rail shooter. Did they bring Rez to VR on PC?
I don't know.
I think they did. I remember people in Slack talking about that, and that would have been a very good answer to give. Is Rez. Let's see. This will be Ben. Yes, there we go. Sorry, I lost the list because I was dropping a marker.
Sorry. Mike says, instead of going with AAA shooters and stuff like that, I'd be interested in how VR could enhance games like Her Story, Papers, Please, or The Hacknet. Their interfaces would encompass a variety of activities, and as an added bonus, they probably wouldn't make you puke.
Ooh, you know, that actually made me randomly think. Clandestine, that game that I was playing with Sam, where like both of the two people playing in co-op mode have like a different view, like one of them is doing the sneaky and the other person is like the hacker person. That would be really, really cool in VR now that I think about it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
The end.
And then we've been going for about 20 minutes. So Jala, finish us out with Alexander.
All right. By and large, I feel like VR should be treated as a fundamentally different experience, and that most adaptations from the non-VR world will not turn out as well as fans anticipate them to be. That said, I feel like VR would be a cool space for adventure games to shine. Something Myst-like in tone and pacing, I could see being very pleasant indeed. Maybe a VR Maniac Mansion or Psychonauts. Anything that lets you explore a cool space and doesn't compel you to sudden frantic action. Motion sickness drawbacks are real.
Amen, brother. I would love like a Maniac Mansion. I've talked about the idea of like having a VR dollhouse kind of thing. Like, give me a VR Maniac Mansion experience, but let me see the entire mansion at once. And I'm like, looking around into the different rooms and moving the kids around.
It's like, I cannot pronounce this, the Sexy Brutale or whatever.
Sexy Brutale?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know the name of it, but I don't know what game it is.
Basically, you're a ghost in a massive mansion, and you have to keep everyone from being murdered, but everything happens in real time, so you have to like keep replaying the thing over and over again, be like, and this time I like go in and steal the bullets from the gun and then put it back so that when he tries to shoot the guy it doesn't go off, and you know, you just have to like keep changing things and see how things play out different.
Yeah,
I could see that being a lot of fun, like you said, kind of a dollhouse mode.
Yeah, I had no idea that's what this game was about. Like the name made it sound like it would be like a Bayonetta knockoff.
Yeah, it's a horribly unfortunate name for what is apparently a pretty pretty creative game.
I'm intrigued. Yeah.
That makes me think of Framed. You know, Framed 2 is the thing? I have it now. I'm going to play it sometime.
I've got that too. Spoiler. I need to play that as well.
Oh, boy.
Framed is very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Abduction VR is a thing. I'd be very curious to see how that plays out. Because that's a very pretty game anyway. Yeah.
I think like every genre possible, an adaptation of Warframe would be epic.
I mean, is that yours? Do you want to make that your answer?
I think so.
Okay.
I think just in general, I will make my answer going forward in multiplayer be Warframe.
That's always Warframe. Favorite Christmas memories? Warframe. Wait, you weren't.
No
playing
one said
that.
Dark Souls.
Oh yeah, true.
I think
yet.
Yeah.
No, I imagine Jolly, you scanned ahead at the people we weren't able to read. Yeah.
I do know.
We got Perfect Dark. That was close.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
My answer, I mean, Justin took mine, Homeworld or something like that, like Dungeon Keeper would be amazing. And I'm not just saying that because we're playing that for WoF. Like, actually, again, having the dollhouse or model or miniature tabletop style thing where you're looking down at the strategy. Basically, I want any kind of VR experience that is not first person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
All right, so I got four. Two not feasible ones, but what I really would like is The Witness and Shadow of the Colossus. I think would be awesome if you could somehow do that. The ones that I think are feasible and would be good are Surgeon Simulator and Rock Band, I think would be really good.
I think Harmonix is doing some kind of Rock Band thing in VR.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I'm not sure how it works, though, so.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, you just need, like, sensors on the drums, maybe, so you know where to hit them.
Oh, yeah, so it would show you, like, where it is.
Yeah.
I think it's Rock Band, but you can only do guitar on it, maybe.
Oh.
Which, that's not Rock Band. Come on, you need the drums for Rock Band.
Mm-hmm.
Jala, how about you?
Well, I said it earlier, but a stealth-like thing would be super awesome, or a gold saucer-like would be awesome. Mm-hmm. But I would say I'm voting for a dungeon crawler, like Eye of the Beholder or something, because I think that would make the whole experience just that much creepier. Because, you know, generally you don't feel creeped out when you're in a dungeon crawler. But like if you are in like first person VR mode, suddenly that's a whole different thing, you know?
Yeah. Legend of Grimrock would be an amazing fit for that,
yeah,
actually,
yeah,
because of the because you are on the grid. Good answers all around. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but we went on too long on individual responses, I think. If you want to participate in these, look for the prompts to go up on Tuesday afternoons. Thanks to Jala and Dennis, Jala in this case, and also thank you, Michael, for submitting this question. It was definitely a noggin scratcher.
The grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the things we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, it has been the longest since you have been here, so I'm going to throw it to you.
I know!
This is, I don't remember a time where I've gone to go first like that before. All right. Okay, so we mentioned the Steam sale before. I picked up a couple of games through that. I picked up a game called Hue, which is a small puzzle game. So I started playing that. The premise of the game is at any point in time, you can change the background to one of eight different colors. You start off the game with only one color and you build your way up. And then you solve puzzles through that. So an example is like there might be a platform where there's crates across the thing of spikes that you have to jump across, but every other crate is a different color. So you change the background color and only half of them exist, so you can't complete the level. So like when you jump, you have to switch color in midair so that you land on a crate that actually exists.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense or not.
If something perfectly matches the background color, then it does not exist. So you need to cycle through so that I get you.
Yeah. And so then there's things like barriers. So when you change color of the background, it'll remove the barriers. And so then there's a lot of interacting with that.
Are there enemies and stuff where that applies?
I have not run into enemies yet.
Okay.
But I am not far into it because I was playing on a trackpad, and there is a part where you need to switch the exact thing I was talking about, where you need to switch colors midair while jumping.
Uh-oh.
And it's very hard to do on a trackpad. So that is what halted my progress on that game.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting little indie game. It's good so far. It was on Steam sale for, I think, like $3 or $4, maybe. Mm-hmm. But
it's normally like $15. This is a game that actually makes sense to have the Limbo-style silhouette visuals because it is so dependent on contrast against the background.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and it does look very similar to, like, Limbo. Well, sorry. It looks like a Limbo, but not as good. I don't know. Whatever.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good comparison.
Mm-hmm.
So another game that I picked up and started playing over the break was The Final Station. I think I maybe mentioned this before.
Huh.
It is a small, like it's like an indie game where it's like dystopian setting. You are a train operator. You go from like city to city, and then when you get to a city, the point of what you're doing is to find the code to get to the next city.
Okay.
And the idea is you were carrying people from stop to stop, and you get paid out for them as long as they make it alive. But things get progressively more grim as you're going from stop to stop. So they do a good job of kind of slowly laying on the story and slowly ratcheting up kind of like the danger and fear. I haven't played too far into it, but so far it's good. Basically, it's like dystopian society. So it's like similar to like The Last of Us or Children of Men. There's like or Half-Life 2. There's, you know, a very rigid police force that you start interacting with.
Yeah.
And then there's kind of subtle cues of like, oh, those are gunshots going off outside of the train. Wonder what that is. And yeah.
Yeah.
So it's good so far. It's just like a, it looks like a retro type game though. It's like very, you know, like low def polygons and stuff like that. It's like a 2D side scroller.
It looks, it would remind you of like a, like Gunpoint if anybody's played that.
Gotcha. Similar to Hugh, I was playing this on a trackpad and eventually you need to be pretty responsive for combat. And so that is what halted my progress of that game.
Yeah.
But I was not able to continue on either of these games because when I got back to a non-trackpad situation, I have been playing Cuphead.
Oh, dang. Yeah.
Yeah. This game I picked up before the Steam sale, which was fine because it did not go on sale for the Steam sale. But man, it is a pretty, pretty game. It it's a platforming game. It's all boss battles. I know a lot of people have been playing this, at least on my friends list. So I'd heard a lot of buzz about it. You play as a person who is a person with a cup for a head. The premise is you owe the devil your soul because of some situation. The only way you can get it back is if you defeat all these people who also owe the devil something.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this results souls. In, yeah. And I'm not sure if there's any reason why they owe them the souls outside of maybe the devil's just really bad at collecting souls for some reason. But so basically this just sets up the premise of playing a lot of different boss battles.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I can't rationalize with this game is I feel like the criticisms I have with like Dark Souls, with like the boss battles of that, this seems like a very similar game where it's like very difficult, but the bosses are like, but for some reason I have no problem with Cuphead, but I can't really reconcile the two, but like basically the way a typical boss battle goes is the boss will have like maybe three or more different stages that they're in. Mm-hmm. And so for a given stage, it'll have a certain moveset. There will be certain things that'll either like throw at you literally, or you know, the environment will have some sort of things that it's like a platformer. So you have to like dodge all these things while shooting the boss at the same time.
It's like it turns in almost like a bullet hell kind of thing where you're going to have patterns of projectiles coming at you that you have to dodge while simultaneously looking for opportunities to do damage.
Yes. And you are just like continually shooting the boss and just loading it full of bullets. The thing that kind of makes it more interesting gameplay than just that is that as you're shooting the boss, you're building up the progress. They have this meter where it's I think five different cards. There's like a gambling theme to the game. As soon as you fill up the meter of a single card, you can press B to do like a power-up shot at the boss, which will do more damage. And if you wait until all five are filled up, then you can press B and then you do like a super move and it wipes out all the cards and you do that. So there's kind of like a little bit of a planning where it's like, okay, if the boss goes through these three stages, this one's the hardest, so if I do, you know, like a semi-powered up move here, then I can get through quicker to the easier part and then do that. So that's kind of like the planning that goes into it. The interesting part is you spend a decent amount of time figuring out what the pattern is of a given stage of a boss, like mm-hmm. what attacks he's throwing at you and kind of what the environment's throwing at you and like what the best way to like navigate that is. And so what's interesting, one of the emergent gameplays of it is, so you'll kind of memorize like the first like third of a stage and then finally you beat it. And what the way that it kind of get rewarded is then the boss will then do something completely different. They'll like change into a different form or they'll like a new like move will come up. And like all of this is done like beautifully. Like the art style is just really, really pretty.
Yeah.
So it's just.
It's specifically cribbing a large amount of its style from like 1930s animation.
Yeah, thinking of like old school Disney or maybe like old school like war poster propaganda posters almost. Or
yeah,
it is very, very nice looking. Mm-hmm. So basically, getting to the next stage of a boss is very much like a treat because like It completely changes the dynamics of how you're fighting. And then you like learn that section and you keep playing it over and over. So it's kind of weird because it's kind of like a more grindy game that I'm used to playing, where like you will play a single level for like 20 minutes consecutively over and over and over again until you kind of like memorize it. The thing that's kind of a little bit sad is, okay, so I beat something and I go on and fight some other bosses. If I go back to the original boss that I beat, I have to go through that process again where I have to like get good at that specific levels, like platforming, and then right. like re-memorize everything and then do it from there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's a super pretty game. If you don't like hard games, don't let that necessarily turn you off. They have like an easier mode for the bosses, like a lighter mode. I haven't switched to it yet. There's like three worlds in the game, mm-hmm. and I'm on the third one, and I kind of out of barrier. I mean, I'll keep trying, but it seems to ratchet up the difficulty when you get to the third island.
Yeah.
So that is an option. If I want to see out the game and I can't get past the bosses, I might go down to a lower difficulty, but mm-hmm. we'll see.
Yeah. Cuphead is a really kind of frustrating situation because almost immediately after its release, the conversation about the game kind of became about the conversation about the conversation about the game. Like,
why are people playing it? Or
yeah, or like, why are people angry about it? Like,
are people angry about it?
There was a tremendous amount of backlash. Yeah, but the difficulty specifically. Gotcha. And it's, I mean, you're on the money when you cite Dark Souls as a comparison point, because that is another game that, you know, in its time brought up a lot of like, are difficult games exclusionary? I'm using that just purely in the terms that just match whatever's here. Like, does it make sense for a game to be so hard that it actively dissuades people from seeing more of it? You know, and that's not a discussion. I think that we're all going to fall on a pretty similar kind of version of that. It seemed to be that people were just kind of like, oh, this wasn't what I expected it to be, and therefore I cannot at all talk about what it is on its terms. That could be a failure of marketing, like, because I know when I saw this, like when they were initially advertising it, I thought, cool, this is going to be another, like, you know, retro style platformer where I'm doing a bunch of stuff. And when I found out that it was a Gunstar Hero style boss, you know, boss hell kind of game, it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, fuck yeah, cool. But it never quite cleared that in the consciousness of people. Are like, yeah, I'm going to play this regular style platform, and they got something that was just way not what they expected.
Sure. I think there's also a little bit, you know, my understanding from people is that the last couple bosses just get sort of unreasonably difficult. And I think there's maybe some pushback that at some point it sort of, you know, crosses the line from being, you know, a challenging, intelligent game to just being hard for being hard's sake.
Yeah, it becomes hateful.
Yeah, I could see it going that direction. I've only done one boss of the final stage, so I haven't gone that deep. But I think maybe that kind of hits on the point that the difference between this and Dark Souls that I see is, like, with Dark Souls, and I have a limited experience, and I know that this isn't speaking objectively about the game, I'm just citing like my personal experience with it, mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. I got to the second boss on the bridge, had a difficult time with it, and when I went to like look up like guides for like how to better take it, like the advice that I got was like, oh, you should wait by the ladder, you know, like if you wait and he jumps down here, you can kind of cheese him and attack him here, and like just do this over and over again until he's dead. And like that felt like very cheap, you know, and kind of like not in the spirit of probably what they were designing. I don't know if that could have just been a bad experience on my end, and that could be like not how people are playing the game actually. Mm-hmm. Cuphead, like the way that you beat it is, it's like and granted, you're just memorizing patterns, and you're not really learning these giant skills that'll carry over to other things. But it's basically you're getting really good at recognizing and reacting to the patterns that they mm-hmm. have in the level, and it feels like you earn the victories every time you win.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, and that sounds like what the designers were explicitly going for with it. So it sounds like it was a success for you.
Yeah. That said, a few of the bosses I've seen on World 3, I could totally see that argument of them being hard for hard's sake. Mm-hmm. I haven't beaten them yet though, so I don't know. I know one of the bosses, is specifically like up high, and you only shoot horizontally. If you stand stationary, you can shoot at angles. Uh-huh. So that seems like a very hard curveball. So
based on the description that you've given, and also the videos that I'm watching right now, I don't think standing stationary is a thing you do very much.
You don't want to do that.
I also know there's at least one boss that is itself more or less a boss rush.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so you have to basically beat like a bunch of mini bosses in order before you can even fight the boss.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
I'm curious how far into the game that one is. If that's like at the end,
that is literally the next to the last one.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Yeah. So I don't know. It could be in a week or two I'll be talking about this game as like the easy difficulty and then talking about how that is. But right now I don't mind the difficulty of the game. So.
It's good. It's good that they introduced the easy difficulty and that it's not just like, we change the numbers around so that you take more hits to die and the enemies take fewer, that they actually like redesign the fights.
Yeah. And so that was one thing I didn't mention too, is you have like 3 life essentially. And so if the boss hits you 3 times, you die. And so that's kind of an interesting mechanic too. So when you get through a certain stage, like you can kind of measure your progress that way. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you pass the first third and you haven't taken a single hit, then you know you're in a good position. If you're at 1 life, you might think about just even restarting at that point, because you probably won't make it through, but I don't know. Yeah.
I'm waiting for it to go on sale, because like I'm a fan of a pretty thing.
Yeah,
you know, like I want to see this game in motion under my control, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had heard it had a good art style as like a sales pitch for the game, and it really didn't land until I watched like the opening like cutscene of the game, and I was just like, oh wow, you know, like it definitely has its own beauty. So all right, and then I think the one last thing that I'll talk a little bit about is I did not buy this on the Steam sale, but some of my friends bought this, so I started playing it. Is I got back into Friday the 13th.
Oh, dang.
Yay!
Yeah. So some of my friends back in Vegas got this game when it was on sale. It was half off during the Thanksgiving sale. And so they started playing it, so I started playing it with them. And so it's been fun. One thing that's changed from when I played it before is we just all talk on like a Discord channel. We don't talk through the game chat anymore, you know, which I don't know. It's in one sense more convenient, but on the other hand, it kind of undermines the spirit of the game, where you thematically pick up a walkie-talkie and then you can talk to people, is what the normal game is. But it's been fun playing with people who haven't played it before and kind of like telling them some of the like the underpinnings of the game, where it's like the fear meter and the tripping and things like that and the ways to escape. So that's been fun to get back into. I know one of the things that kind of got me to fall off of the game is I had no one to play it with before. So this kind of makes it like a little bit better, and I think I definitely can see the value to the game if you have like a party of like 4 or 5 people to play it with. It definitely improves the experience.
Nice. So,
yeah, and then I think the kind of house rule that we've been doing is if you're Jason, you basically mute the Discord channel so that you can't hear what they're saying and they can't hear you.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah.
So that's been cool.
Nice.
It's
a good crop of stuff.
Yeah, I've had a decent amount of busyness, I guess, over the last couple weeks. So,
Yay!
Cool.
All right. That's all I got.
Jala, I'm curious about what you're playing, specifically because one of them is a game I've meant to play for a very long time. So, go ahead. It's your turn now.
Okay, it is my turn now. So, first off, in my little co-op corner, I finally got some co-op time. It's been a while. I played with Graham, Sam, and Briar, and we jumped into Broforce for a little bit for the first time in a while. And it was Briar's first time playing. And we started on like level 38 or something with a bunch of aliens, because I just did not want to play the beginning of the game for the 100th time. And I just basically wanted to mention this because we had a really funny moment when we were trying to fight a horde of aliens in a survive for X amount of time section.
Okay.
And everybody other than Graham died, but then the helicopter he was supposed to hop onto at the end of the level blew up because an alien hit it. And so, like, we were waiting to see if, like, another helicopter would come, but it didn't. It just broke the game. And so he was just, like, alive for another couple of minutes before finally being overwhelmed. But there was no way to actually end the level.
He was just stuck.
So, yeah, it was, like, a terrible, horrible, and tragic ending. But it was also hilarious.
Very
so
bleak.
Yeah, so that was a thing that happened. And I've also been playing another game that I picked up more recently. It was totally made for me. It's called Flying Hamster. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, for people who don't know, I absolutely love hammies, and particularly the long-haired Angora variety, because they're very chill. They're actually the most intelligent, and they're very cuddly and adorable. And I actually had a long-haired male Angora that came to me via Hurricane Andrew in Florida, named Harry Houdini. And Harry basically walked across my dad's tarp when he was painting somebody's house, and my dad scooped him up and put him in a bucket and was going to give the hamster to my mom, who worked at a pet shop, so she could just, like, you know, sell it or whatever. And then I saw him, and that's as far as that went. I fell in love, and he became my pet. And he was a little gentleman, and he would watch TV with me and put his little paw on me and just, like, sit with me. And he would escape from his house, but he would, like, come and find one of us, or just kind of, like, hang out. He just didn't want to be in his cage. And so, like, he never chewed anything up or anything. He was just, like, walking around. One time I remember I woke up because I felt something on, like, furry on my arm. And I'm like, what the hell? So I push it off the bed and I turn on the light, and it was Harry. He had gotten out of his cage and climbed up my bed to come and visit me.
It was ridiculously sweet.
It is super adorable. And, like, my entire family, including both of my parents, cried when he died.
Aww.
So, like, I have very, very strong fond memories of hammies. So you play a hamster in this game named Newton, whose girlfriend was carried off by an eagle. And basically you strap on a flight cap and some goggles just because they look cool and a belt. And you use a little plant as a propeller.
Okay.
And then you go flying off in search of the eagle and your girlfriend. And it's a side-scrolling shooter, which is a genre I have not had fun with in a very, very long time. So it's on iPhone, iPad, PSP, and PlayStation 3. I played it on my Vita. It has really great music, and it's free. So I just downloaded it off of, like, their Bandcamp page. And it's got cute little graphics and really, really random enemies. Like, my favorite is a cow that runs along the ground on its hind legs, and then it stops and shoots milk from its udders like it's a Gatling gun, which is actually pretty crazy. And, like, there's a lot of fun with, like, the different weapon power-ups. Like, there's sunflower seeds that have, like, rapid fire, or berries which have a spread shot. And yeah, like, I've had a lot of fun with some of the levels. They're very interesting and creative, and it's really cute.
Yeah.
And as you get trophies, you unlock extra continues, so that way you can keep playing the game. So that's also very cool. So yeah, I am not done with that game, but I have been having fun playing around with it. So
when you say side-scrolling shooter, you mean like a Gradius kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So it's super cute. I love it.
I want to rewind you a couple minutes. You said that Angora hamsters are the most intelligent. Do you mean of the hamsters, right?
Yes.
Okay. Whew.
Jury's out.
Okay. I thought just all of a sudden the smartest thing on earth was a hamster that had long hair.
To be fair, 2017 has kind of called our position into question.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. By which I mean, we got some crabs coming our way.
So anyway, that's a super cute game. It's adorable. I love it.
Flying hamster.
I love a hammy. So the last thing I've been playing is the one I'm going to be camping out on for a little bit, Corpse Party. So this is it's a survival horror adventure game made in RPG Maker initially for the PC 98, but then remade for Windows, PSP, and iOS. The PSP game is apparently the version that has the least amount of content other than the original PC 98, but it allegedly has the best experience insofar as how it runs is concerned. There are two more games that are available in America, Corpse Party Blood Drive and Corpse Party Book of Shadows. I have Book of Shadows, which is the second game. Mm-hmm. And I've started playing that very, very barely, but I'm not going to talk about that one.
Yeah, yet. That one's only PSP at this point, right?
I don't know. I don't know if somebody had said something about that game and the original game being rolled together into the PC remake or something.
Oh, dang. Yeah.
So I don't know if that's true or if whatever. I didn't look into it because I'm playing it on my Vita. I don't care.
Right.
So sorry. I mean, if you want to know, go look it up. I don't know. So yeah, I wanted to know too, and it's true that the games came first, and after the games, several manga and anime OAV series and drama CDs, even theme park attractions and two live action films. Mm-hmm. It feels totally like a horror movie to the point that I actually had like no problem at all being hand wavy about the whys about things or like what's happening in the game, even though the game itself does actually explain stuff as it goes along. Mm-hmm. It takes it a while before it gets to the explanatory bits, but you know, everything does for the most part get wrapped up and explained. Yeah. Pretty well.
Give the premise of the game so people understand why this is like why this is being made into animes and stuff.
I was getting there.
Oh, sorry.
So it actually kind of reminds me of Danganronpa in that at its basis level, the story is bunch of high school kids trapped in a school dying over time, but this time it's due to paranormal activity and their own fear and all different kinds of stuff like that. So basically what happens is these kids are telling ghost stories after a cultural festival at their school. One of the kids is changing schools and it was her last day. So they decide to do like a ritual that this one particular girl who's into occult stuff found that's supposed to make them friends forever. And right after they do this, there's this big earthquake. And then they fall through the floor, and then they all wake up in, like, this crazy haunted school.
It's like a nightmare version, like a Silent Hill otherworld version of their school.
Yeah, it's an alternate dimension, and it's filled with corpses of other people that were trapped there, and it's haunted by malevolent spirits and the people who were trapped. And, you know, like, there are some of the spirits that are actually killing other people. Then there are the people who are just dead that just walk the place. And basically, they're in a broken down elementary school that was built, you know, underneath where their high school was. And it was eventually torn down after there was like a gruesome murder of several of the students and even some of the staff by one of the teachers. So that's a thing. And this game doesn't pull any punches. Like, there's some really rough stuff that happens in this game,
but they get away with it because it's all description, right?
It is, exactly. And this was something I wanted to bring up because I just talked about how I'm not a fan of gore when I mentioned the Resident Evil 7 stuff, and that holds true. But because this game was made in RPG Maker, and although there are illustrations of some of the dramatic parts, the really terrible parts are described just with words on a totally black screen. But they usually have audio, which makes it real creepy. But it still isn't the kind of sensationalist, you know, mode of eliciting horror that the start of RE7 was, because it's not in your face, you know, in the same way.
It's not in your face insistently and repeatedly.
Yeah. And so the events in the story are rough as hell, especially if you mess up and you get one of the bad endings. But even if you're mainlining it, it's got like really terrible stuff that happens in this game. Wow. There are a bunch of different chase scenes, some of which aren't really all that spooky and some of which are. In some cases, you can hear the voice of your pursuer taunting you as you're running around trying to get away. And like, they may or may not actually be on the screen, but you can hear them, you know, saying stuff to you. And you know that like the moment they catch you, you are dead.
Yeah.
So, and in a very terrible fashion, you know, that you're going to hear the sound effects for. So, I'm not really sure if I would receive the manga, anime, or live movies with the same enthusiasm as the game, though, because it depends on how they go about expressing all those nasty bits. Mm-hmm. Because, again, it's that whole, like, I'm not really into the gore bit, you know. But, man, the descriptions, oh, my God. Like, Cole, when you play this game, you're just going to be like, whoa.
This is early on in my list of Hexcrank games I want to play after I finish the Duckstream requests.
I would look forward to watching the game all over again and just like you know, hearing you go through it, because yeah. it's pretty amazing. And some of the descriptions, like, okay, one of the lines that I had screenshotted and dropped onto social media: the sound of a foreign object scraping against her cranium echoes through her mind mercilessly, not from her eardrums, but directly to her brain. And that's just one little bit of like this whole long thing talking about it, and there's sound effects going, and it's a black screen. You can't see anything, but it's just, whoa, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't anticipate this, but the soundtrack is actually really good in this game, and I didn't have any expectations, but I want to find a place to download the music so I can put some of it in my running playlist because I really like it. And the PSP version is split into 5 chapters. There's also an extras menu that has 10 EX chapters that are unlocked by obtaining certain endings in specific chapters. Like, you have to get this bad ending or, you know, this true ending in this particular part. And this is actually not nearly as irritating as I thought it might be, because this sounds kind of like it would be a VLR situation where mm-hmm. you have to go back on the timeline. But you can access each of the chapters individually from the main screen, and you can create multiple different saves in each chapter. So what was recommended to me was that I pull up a spoiler-free ending guide, figure out like what I need to do to get each of those endings. You know, and the spoiler-free walkthrough that I pulled up doesn't tell you what's going to happen. It just says, at this point, select the second option or something.
Yeah,
you
yeah. know?
And that was a good way to do it, because I could save. You have like 5 save slots per chapter, so I could save at different junctures where I could get multiple endings
mm-hmm.
and then just reload that one part and then see the other ending and then move on, you yeah. know? So that was actually pretty convenient. So if somebody wants to pick this up and unlock everything, then I would recommend using a spoiler-free ending guide. That also is good too, because you can kind of like stymie yourself and, you know, get like, oh, where do I go now? I don't even know. And that kind of a thing. And then that can get kind of frustrating. I actually liked having the guide for this because it doesn't, you know, spoil anything of the story. I really just wanted to get the story out of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I like that this wasn't like a visual novel. I like that I have to actively do things, that there are chase scenes, you know, that there are things like that that go on. So anyway, the story is engaging enough that I didn't even mind going back and rereading parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not the case in Steins Gate and VLR, because those games have a lot of explanation dumps everywhere. And Corpse Party is overall more focused on the characterization, even though there are those explanations for things that I had questions about, like I said.
Yeah.
But it's like the way that it disseminates into the game itself is such that it's not everything all at once in a big dump. It's just kind of over time you piece together tidbits about what really went on and how everything's, you know, fitting together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the pacing is really good. I'll say that. And, yeah, the EX chapters cleared up a little bit more, but mostly it's just kind of like a lot of the EX chapters will have flashbacks to the characters, you know, that are in your main party that you play as. But there's also whole, you know, chapters that are dedicated to corpses, like people that you find, that you just find their name tags on a dead body and you don't know what happened to them. And then you see a little bit of like what their experiences were
mm-hmm.
In those EX chapters, which was really cool. And the ending totally sets it up for a nice sequel, but alternately could also be left off without a follow-up just as easily. So it's really cool.
Yeah. So you don't feel bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So I am definitely like excited to play the next one, but at the same time, I kind of like took a break and played Flying Hamster because that's a cute and happy one, because, you know, like before that I was having like all these terrible descriptions of all these horrible ways to die, you know, for like hours and hours of game. Yeah. So you know, not that everything was a terrible death and all this other stuff, but there were some definite horror elements that I was just staring at my screen and going, oh my God, I've got to share this. Oh my God, somebody else read this. Damn, Cole needs to play this game.
So. I do. Ever since I first heard about the first one, like, it was this weird oddity that was only released. Like, it's a full game only released on, like, digital version on the original PSP, a system I never had. I mean, I have it, but I didn't have it when it was, like, a modern system. You know, man, I want to find a way to play this. It's on iOS, but it's, as far as I know, it's only the Japanese version. I got the Vita, and then, you know what happens when you get a game.
Yeah.
You don't play it. but yeah, I need to play this sooner rather than later, because it is great to hear how excited you are about it. And
I'm jazzed about this because the pacing is good. I mean, like, it starts out a little slow, but it picks up pace real fast, and then it just stays at a good pace throughout the rest of it. And there were a couple of people in the Slack who were like, oh, this is very anime, but it's different than the Danganronpa version of anime, where, like, they just kind of, like, go over the top with those archetypes. Mm-hmm. This game doesn't do that. Like, yeah, there's certain things that happen that are common to anime because it's a medium in which is saturated with lots and lots of shows and, you know, manga and whatever. So yeah, there's tropes, yes. Yeah. But
at the most superficial level, like, you are dealing with a lot of characters who are in school uniforms, which I think is, you know, for a lot of people is like oftentimes is a signifier that, like, do I want to pay attention to this?
Yeah. But that being the case, though, the beginning of the game, I didn't know that I would really care much about the characters, but actually I ended up liking a lot of the characters a lot more than I thought I would, because they are multidimensional. It's not the Danganronpa problem of they lean into the archetype so much that is all they are, is that archetype.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the one-dimensional character. They've got a lot going on. And, you know, like, there is a character who has this weird... like, he's really, really sweet and really intelligent and all this other stuff, but he also has this really creepy, you know, facet to his personality that you find out at a certain point in the game. And when you do, like, it just, every time you see him after that, it just gets progressively worse and creepier.
Yeah.
So, but he's actually, before they ended up in this crazy school, he was, you know, actually a really nice guy, and, you know, just some weird crap happened, and he's not like a bad guy, he's just a little fucked up.
The intense pressure of the situation has brought out the worst side of him.
Yes, that exactly. So it's a thing. It is a good game, and it is a horror game for sure. So
into it. Awesome. Well, I'm very happy to hear that you like that.
Oh yeah, I do. And I need to get the Musax so I can put that in place.
Yeah, the soundtrack has been on my list for a very long time. Yeah. Cool. Well, is that all?
Well, I've been playing other stuff, but I don't know how long you want me to keep rambling. I might want to toss to somebody else.
Yeah, it probably would be good to toss it to other people for time reasons. David, I want to hear what you have been playing.
Sure. So I've been playing a little bit of Destiny. There was the return of the Iron Banner, which is their PvP event. So, you know, played some of that with Dennis.
So this is probably Destiny 2.
Yes. Yeah. Probably the most fun is we had is if you're playing as the Titan, which is kind of the aggressive tanky class. There is a high-end armor that continuously reloads part of a assault rifle's ammunition, and there is an assault rifle that is just a chain gun with a very large clip. And so as long as you even vaguely try to burst fire the gun, you can basically just fire indefinitely. And so we ended up in a match, these are 4-on-4 matches, where both he and I, as well as one of the guys on the other team, were using this setup.
Okay.
And so it was just us trying to, like, out-bullet hose each other. So it was completely ridiculous and, like, only moderately successful, but it was a lot of fun.
Okay.
So that's honestly mainly that for Destiny. Other than that, I've still been kind of grinding on Metal Gear Solid. I'll be honest, I'm really having kind of some mixed feelings.
So you're after the ending of the main, you're after chapter one.
Maybe. I'm
What terrain are you in?
I am back in Afghanistan.
All right.
Yep. I am one of your buddies goes AWOL, and I am dealing with the aftermath currently.
Yeah, you're in chapter two.
Okay.
Yeah, and you're right to be conflicted about that, because like that should be the plot of an entirely other game, but they decided, no, we're just going to make this a real disjointed thing that you do sometimes in between rehashes of old missions you've already done.
Right. So it's a combination of things where, like you said, there's a lot of things about the game that I'm not entirely convinced this story is going to hold together.
It won't.
Welcome to a Metal Gear Solid game.
Well, yeah, I don't know. And I feel like I'm a little bit disappointed, just because it seems like there were a lot of really neat angles the story could have gone.
Uh-huh.
In terms of, like, you know, in particular, like, the literally, you know, tutorial mission of the game is... one, probably the best mission in the game, and yeah. Like introduces a lot of really neat ideas, you know, Snake as, you know, actually having vulnerability as opposed to being some sort of like crazy super soldier.
Pirate demon.
Yeah. You know, they could have made the game, you know, like a weird science, you know, kind of Cold War, like, you know, Stranger Things type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Easily.
Yeah.
They could have actually made it be, you know, espionage at any point, as opposed to, I think at this point, I've basically progressively killed everyone that's opposed to me.
It's like espionage optional.
Yeah. Well, yes. And I guess my problem with that in that respect isn't so much from a gameplay standpoint that's like that, but so much as is, like, if you go back and look at the missions and you know, at the end of almost every mission and you know, definitely every, like, kind of mini story arc that makes up the game, like, whatever the problem was I was dealing with is completely dead, as opposed to being some sort of, you know, thing where it's like, you know, oh, well, we've kind of dealt with this, but, you know, this is some vast conspiracy, so, like, you know, we're in a more tenuous situation than we were before. It's like, no, pretty much I've just, like, killed all of the skulls, and I don't know. It bothers me.
Mm.
But there's also a thing where there's a number of missions that very aggressively actually, like, hurt your progression.
What do you mean?
In terms of, like, killing off a number of your, a large number of your...
your base staff, yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then, like I said, you losing one of your buddies.
Right.
So, it's also, right now I'm stuck on the mission after that is the only mission in the game you cannot stop playing after you've started it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even if you die or, you know, restart the mission or something like that, there's no way to actually exit the mission. But I do actually, though, I have to say, I was looking for some advice on it, and I think I saw one of my favorite forum commentaries in a long time. Someone just commenting that they wish the intelligence briefing for this level had been something along the lines of, "Hey, Snake, by the way, there's a, you know, entire Russian tank battalion about 10 feet away. Also, Quiet is now Raiden from Metal Gear Solid Revengeance."
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's kind of mixed. But the core game I'm actually still enjoying, and yeah, I'm still enjoying its, you know, a lot of this stuff it does. Mm-hmm. It's just I'm kind of disappointed about the story.
Yep, that'll happen after. Yeah, that'll happen in the back third of that game. Like that's, I mean, remember way back in 2015 when I said, "Oh yeah, Chapter 1 of Metal Gear Solid 5 is probably my game of the year."
Sure.
For that, you know. Like you're experiencing firsthand why I made that very strong caveat.
Yeah. Yeah. So, other than that, I did enjoy the just random side op where you rescue Kojima. That was pretty funny.
Yep, kept you waiting, huh?
Yeah.
That's a meme. Yeah.
So, I there's a lot of things that are likable about it. I like a lot of some of the random details they put into the weapon handling. You know, the fact that you have to manually, if you want an extra bullet in the chamber, you have to manually load it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the whole thing with, like, you know, causing misfires. Ocelot complaining about causing misfires with a semi-automatic gun if you don't hold your wrist steady. Stuff like that. Like, there's parts I definitely like about it.
That's a callback to MGS3 as well.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I have to say, like, I feel like the other thing is I get the idea, like, about halfway through Chapter 2, like, up to that point, it does a really good job of, you know, it's very much a game that in a lot of ways is based on what's happened earlier in the season, or in the series, mm-hmm. but it's very understandable. Whereas there's definitely a part at which, like, it makes no sense whatsoever. Like, I have no idea who the heck the man on fire is.
You would if you played.
Yeah, but that's my point. It's like, yeah. it's okay to have callbacks, but there needs to be at least some degree.
Well, the function of the man on fire does, like, it does not depend on you knowing that piece of trivia. It really, like, truly doesn't, because it is meant to be this uncanny, otherworldly thing. Like, knowing who that is doesn't add anything to it.
Okay. Yeah. I would say that's fairly accurate up until the final cutscene, which makes no sense.
Yeah, it also didn't make sense. It's really hard to talk about this stuff.
Okay, sorry about that.
Yeah.
Other than that, actually, one question I did have, something I don't understand is what's the point of the Metal Gear? Like, they're supposed to be this ultimate weapon, but they seem, like, just less efficient, more expensive versions of the ways we already would have had to deliver nukes.
Yep.
Yeah, like, there's a little bit of that I can give you. So, nominally, it's supposed to be that you could fire a nuke from anywhere.
Which we can literally, like, by this point, we have nuclear subs, long-range bombers, and intercontinental ballistic missiles. We can already do that.
Right, but it does need to fire from, like, a silo or something like that. Like, I'm not saying it makes sense. I'm just telling you what it, like the way that it's presented. So the reason why it walks is so it can reach any kind of terrain. That was kind of the big kind of innovation that Huey brought to this. Huey Emmerich was, you know, bringing the ability to make it walk bipedal. Before that, it was the Shagohod, which kind of moved on this really cool like screw style mechanism. And then Metal Gear Ray, the one from Metal Gear Solid 1, that fires its nuke off of a railgun. It's not a ballistic missile. Like, it doesn't actually like have its own propulsion system. It can still hit it from the end of the, you know, from anywhere in the world. The idea being that because it doesn't have propulsion, it can't be detected.
I guess that makes that at least is like a compelling claim, you know.
Right. And then Metal Gear Solid 2 onward, the actual threat of the Metal Gear was kind of downplayed compared to a bunch of other stuff. But the Metal Gear in that one, Metal Gear Ray, was designed as this anti-Metal Gear because because a lot of different countries and like even companies got a hold of Metal Gear technology to kind of protect themselves. It kind of just got disseminated because of the Shadow Moses incident. So that Metal Gear Ray specifically was important because it is a an amphibious anti-Metal Gear kind of thing, a countermeasure.
Huh. And then don't they just make fun of the idea of it having legs in Metal Gear 3?
Yeah. It's just like, oh, that's completely impractical, is what Sokolov says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Forgive me if I got any of that wrong, because
I feel like the broad strokes are there. So I don't know. Still enjoying it, but. We'll see.
Yeah, the play's the thing, honestly. I think that mechanically that game is kind of unimpeachable. The story is a goddamn mess, but what are you gonna do?
Yeah, there's good things about it. Although I don't quite get the whole like Snake is an awful person, considering like if you look at like the overall like amount of you know, military things I've accomplished versus my body count. Like, I'm an effing saint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Snake is a complicated, or, you know, Big Boss is a complicated character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereby complicated, we mean he repeats, you know, the last word the previous speaker said.
Yep. He's basically Dougie from Twin Peaks The Return. Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty much all I've got.
Okay, cool. So I don't know how long I'm going to go with mine. I only have two because I've again been submerged in The Witcher. But hey, I'm finally ready to play the expansions in The Witcher.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
I envy you because I tried playing them like months after I beat the regular game, and I just couldn't get back into it.
Oh dang. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, everybody like won't climb off of my dick about like, oh, you like that main game? You got to play the expansions. Like, put in another 40 fucking hours into this. Okay, otherwise I won't hear the end of it. Also, we're like covering them on the show eventually, so I needed to do it.
It's also a great game
too. Yeah. So, when I was in San Francisco, one of the kind of fun experiences I had is there's a big like indie game developer conference and. Had a couple come in from Poland that were developers, and we, you know, ended up talking about Witcher, and you know, ended up with me explaining how the fact that like in English the name makes no freaking sense.
Oh yeah, well over there like it translates to the Hexer, which makes a bit more sense.
Yeah. So yeah, it basically goes on to like the origin of. R word for witch versus the origin of like most Eastern European words for witches aren't the same. So when they translate it literally, it didn't work.
Yeah. It's fine. I'm like, I'm all in on this universe. Like I've already picked up the books. Yeah, it's so fucking good. It is so good, you guys. And just go listen to Watch Out for Fireballs for a straight month of his saying it's so fucking good, you guys. over and over again for hours on end. but on to games I can actually talk about in this show. Hey Ben, I played Rocket League.
Hey,
yeah,
how'd you do?
I did okay. I've gotten a couple of goals in. Came out on Switch. That's a fun game.
Yeah.
It is pretty cool. I feel like I'm useless on my team. Without communication, I don't know how to, like, basically, like, okay, if I see nobody in the backfield, then I'm going to try and, like, kick back and see if I can play defense, because no, like, there's no designated goalie or anything, and sometimes people just fuck up. I didn't expect it to be as fast or as fluid as it is, honestly.
Okay. I don't know what the skill levels at the Switch are. People doing aerials all over the place? Are they like rocketing through the air to hit the ball out of the air?
Yeah, you see that. So when you play on Switch, you get matched up by their matchmaking system across the PC and across Xbox, not on PS4.
Gotcha.
So I'm playing, you know, like you're playing generally with people, you know, with a very large, you're pulling for people at your level from a very large pool of potential combatants.
Gotcha. Are you ranked yet? Are you unranked or?
I don't know. I've played about like 10 matches probably.
Okay. Cause I think it's after 10 or 12, they rank you and then you start playing people like at that level, and then you can kind of, you know, depending on how many times you win or lose in a row, you go up or down in rank.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Yeah. No, it's really fun. I like the jet aerial stuff. Like that is cool. It is very satisfying to anticipate the arc of whatever's going to be incoming.
Yeah.
And like when you just kind of like smack it with your ass, you know, like then boom, there it goes.
Yeah,
you know, you smack it with your ass and boom, there it goes.
And you like double jump and roll into it or something like that and hit it at the right angle.
Yeah.
Or if you can do the second jump like to the side and put a spin on it and mm-hmm. twist it into the goal. Yeah, it's very satisfying.
Yeah, yeah. Like that initial rush, you know, like for the tip off essentially at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like if you end up smashing it from there, like one of my goals has been to one of the goals that I made was I just like plunked it right in from the tip off and like fuck uh-huh. yeah, get that. Also like kicking the e-brake and then swinging the back end of your car around to like
yeah
yeah, like, you know, it's all incredibly intuitive to accomplish what you want to accomplish. And mm-hmm. you know, like, this is a sports game and a driving game, neither of which are game genres that I'm especially good at. You know, like, yeah. I just don't spend an awful lot of time with them. I am surprised at how easy it is to translate my intention into action through this.
Mm-hmm. I was talking with one of my friends last night. We were playing it last night and talking about how this is basically replaced like Call of Duty for me, or like mm-hmm. a shooter, what would be a shooter game like Halo back in the day. And it's a weird genre game. There's not another game that's exactly like Rocket League. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, as you said, it's like kind of sports game, but not really. One thing I was have you done anything with rotating your car in the air? Cool. Because that's like another like fun like meta game or whatever, where you have to try and land your car like exactly flush with whatever surface you're gonna hit, and then like
so you're playing you're playing 3D Excitebike.
Yeah. yeah that's a good way to phrase it. Yeah, and I remember the rush of getting the like first couple goals when I first started playing, because like when you initially start playing, you're playing with people who've been playing it for a lot longer than you have, and so it's like, yeah, you kind of feel like the little leaguer, you know, like the guy playing with his bigger brother, you know.
Rudy.
And so,
Rudy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love how short the rounds are as well. You know, mm-hmm. like you're playing for, you know, like 8 minutes, which
Five,
is
8 minutes, yeah. yeah,
which is perfect. Like that is, you know, especially on the Switch. You know, if you're playing that while you're, you know, waiting for your water to boil or something like that.
And so have you played this like off the do you typically play it on the big screen, or do you typically play it handheld?
Only ever handheld. I'm sure it'll be great on the big screen, but
Nice. Yeah. Okay, cool.
It's great. So I haven't played around with like the matchmaking, so I don't know if I can like add you to a friend list and jump in. I don't know if we'd ever be matched, because you're godly at this and I'm, you know, a straight up busta, but
I'm not. Yeah, I will look this up after this podcast to see if you can crossplay with people. Because yeah, I would love to. We've started to do private matches if we have enough people in the group, and where you just play like 4-on-4 or something like that. So yeah, it would be awesome to play.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'll be useless, or you know,
no,
so
no,
you
no.
can just dunk on me if you want.
No. We played with first timers last week too, so there's a good skill spread, and we usually divvy it up on both teams. So
yeah,
you would be welcome with open arms. You do fine.
Yeah. No, yeah. It is an incredibly good game. I've enjoyed myself with it. I don't know how long the legs are going to be on it. It seemed like a good match for the Switch, and so I was like, yeah, I'm cool getting this.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The other thing I've been playing, finally ready to talk about it because I broke the Stardew Valley fever that I had.
a lot of fluids.
Man, it was a
yay! I'm so glad. I'm sorry, I don't care about it, so I'm happy you're moving on.
Well, I never made a huge deal about it on the show.
Oh, I know lots and lots of people like that game, and yeah, I know that everybody else wants to hear about it, but I'm done. So I'm happy.
Eventually, I figured out that there wasn't that much more to say aside from, oh yeah, I've been playing more Stardew Valley, and here's more cows.
Well, the thing that you're going to talk about, I'm pretty sure, is going to make me want to flip a table. That's all right.
If you played it, yeah, it probably would.
I can hear about it and be okay. That's right. I'm okay with that.
You'll be fine. I've been playing New Super Danganronpa V3 Killing Harmony, or Danganronpa 3, if you strip away the fucking asinine anime title off of that goddamn thing. So this is the third game in the Danganronpa series, maybe fourth if you count like the spinoff or whatever. Very similar to the first two, visual novel style game that has the class trial or the Phoenix Wright style, you know, argumentation kind of stuff built into it. I have been playing this off and on for a little while. The reason I'm talking about it now is because I have kind of started playing it really in earnest, making a lot of progress in it. I didn't feel like I had a lot to say earlier on. This is definitely a game that is in the Danganronpa style. It only barely warrants mention on the show because the trial mechanic is actually a mechanic. This is not just a straight up visual novel. The idea of this series, if you don't know, you are, a member of this class of ultimates, these people who are these high school students who are distinguished in their skill, the very best of the best at what you do, who has been kind of put into kidnapped and put into this situation where you're at a school and forced into a killing game where nobody can escape unless you kill somebody. If you kill somebody and you get away with it, nobody figures out that you did it, then you're allowed to leave and everybody else gets killed. If you kill somebody and they catch you, then you're executed by this kind of just sadistic monomaniacal bear named Monokuma. This is a game that indulges in a lot of anime tropes, and as we've established before, Jala has the antibodies for those, whereas I do not. Like, I'm down with the crazy over the top stylisticness of it. I'm especially down with some of the bug nuts kind of twists and turns that the series took from the second game onward. Like, this seems to be continuing a bunch of those. Like, there's some technology that shouldn't exist in this one. Danganronpa V3 adds a couple of wrinkles to the class trial that I think are actually pretty good. The biggest one of them is that you can lie. So you can actively perjure yourself in the middle of a class trial like the way those usually work is everybody kind of gives their testimony and there are certain keywords that you can refute with evidence. And if you decide to, you know, take it and twist it, like, okay, I've decided I'm going to lie during this one, then you say the opposite and that can either derail the argument and make it more into the line of argument that you want to make, or, they've actually built in like backdoors through the course of the logic of the arguments. So you're not just at the whim of what every other classmate wants to say.
Well, that's cool, because the mechanics were the part about it that I actually liked. So
yeah, they lean really hard into the mechanics, and like I'm not ashamed to admit that, like, whenever they say, oh, you have free time, like, go around and talk to these different characters and do the little like dating sim side of it, I'm like, no, I'm just gonna skip this and go on because I want to get to the murder, because they're always really interesting. and B, like actually figuring out what happened in them is, you know, investigating and deducing is cool and good.
Time to go murder and lie.
Well, go ahead.
So can you like purposely allow someone to get away with their murder?
No. It's a little bit more on rails than that. If somebody gets away with their murder, then everybody dies.
So they get away with all the murders.
Right.
Yeah, I liked the way that the murders came about, like the, you know, the story of what actually happened for each of the murders. Those were interesting, and mm-hmm. the, you know, mechanic side of it were all the parts that I liked. It's just, yeah.
Yeah. These games, you know, the first game even falls into this, but it's especially true, I think, on your second and third one, if you play them, like, the cast is just way too big. Like, you start with 16 students, and you've got Monokuma, who takes up a lot of screen time, and it's like, I know a bunch of you are going to die, so I would really rather, like, just the game focus on the characters that I'm going to be spending time with. Not the not the ones that are like, you know, that are going to go away. It just feels like, oh man, like there's a tremendous amount of friction to the first handful of chapters before the cast starts getting winnowed down, because like a bunch of them, like they are two sentence concepts. They get way more interesting once they're corpses.
Yeah. And see, that's exactly what a lot of my problem was, is that, you know, the characters themselves were such, you know, two sentence concepts, as you say, to the point that, like, I was really, especially because of all the sugar that was talked about the game, I was expecting, you know, everything to get turned on its head. And, you know, while the murders themselves were interesting and how those came about were interesting, you know, like, there were just a lot of decisions that were made where, like, I was expecting this ending to be this great crescendo, and it did not land for me whatsoever. And that was my biggest problem. I mean, like, I can tolerate the, you know, archetypes to a degree, especially if they are serving some awesome ending. But so the ending just did not land for me. And the problem was the potential that I saw in the game, given the energy and enthusiasm that was put into the game for the murders and the mechanics, like all of that kind of indicated to me that this ending was going to be so great. And then it just ended up falling into the, you know, archetypical stories that you see in lots and lots of other anime type stuff. So I was like, ugh. That's what made me mad more than anything else. Like, I was doing all right, and I was actually kind of into it. You know, it kind of got somewhat mad at times, and then I just got really mad at the end of the game, and I just wanted to throw my Vita because I was just pissed at the ending. But my overall tolerance for Danganronpa was better than my tolerance for VLR. VLR, I just was mad at it almost the entire time I played it. But
this is not me saying to you, play Danganronpa 2, because I wouldn't say that.
Not now.
what you're describing is a problem with DR1. Like, I was fine enough with the mini stories in DR1, where I was like, okay, well, whatever, this ending, shrug, whatever. They got better at making the overall arc of the entire game from chapter to chapter to chapter more satisfying in 2, and they're doing a lot of the same stuff in 3 as well. And they've gotten more canny about revealing just enough information about the meta story to put things into context and make it so that you're not just looking for the next person to die.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I do have Danganronpa 2 floating around on my Vita somewhere for reasons I can't. I don't know, because I have no recollection whatsoever for having bought the game.
Because I'm just like, I can't say this enough. I didn't tell you to do that.
Well, and then if you had, I wouldn't necessarily, after being scarred, I wouldn't necessarily have continued on from there, because I think I bought Danganronpa and VLR around the same time. And with VLR, part of it was I liked 999.
You're talking about Virtue's Last Reward, the sequel to Nine Persons, Nine Doors.
Yeah, and I liked 999, so I figured I would like Virtue's Last Reward. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't even 100% you. That was also I played, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it was just mostly your fault.
Yeah, it was mostly Cole's fault because it's funnier that way, and the listeners like it when it's your fault and I get mad at you. So, I mean, like...
Everybody wins,
I've
except
accepted.
For Cole.
I've accepted this.
Everybody but Cole, yeah.
Well, no, I won because I played a game I liked.
Yeah, right, right. Well, anyway, so with Danganronpa 3, how's the pacing and everything going so far? Is it like that's kind of slow stuff you were talking about, or is
a little bit like the first, like the intro is way too long. The first chapter takes a while to get going. Like, you know, it's a little bit like water skiing, right? You're going to get pummeled. You're going to get pummeled by a bunch of bullshit until you break a plane. And then all of a sudden you're soaring to the end, you know? So eventually you're going to get there. One thing that they introduce in Danganronpa V3, they're kind of intentionally leaning into. So Monokuma, again, the villain of this, the black and white bear that you see in the images and memes and stuff, he's annoying enough. What if we didn't just give him like one scrappy do, like a tiny little Monokuma? Let's give him five different Monokuma cubs, the Mono cubs. And each of them, you know, they're different colors. It's a little bit like a Sentai kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They have different personality quirks, and like it's just five different villains who every time Monokuma says something, the camera pans over to each of them, and each of them says one little line of bullshit that doesn't add anything. It's just a reaction.
Yeah. But meanwhile, I'm still like, now that you've thrown Sentai in there, my brain went every which way because you were talking about breaking a plane and skiing off into the great beyond or whatever the hell it was you were talking about. And I'm just trying to imagine you like flying, soaring, as you, that soaring was your word. Yeah. And then you started throwing Sentai in there, and I'm trying to figure out what like pose you'd have doing
this.
Yeah,
I'm mixing my metaphor. People who have like water skied know what I'm talking about. Once you go fast enough, you're on top of the water. It's what I mean. But like, so I don't like this. Like, this is probably a spoiler, but if you're listening to the show and what I just said sounds like, oh, that's going to be intolerable. Yes, it is for the prologue in the first chapter. But then they start dying too. So,
oh, good.
Like, this is a game that has a cast that is way too big, and the quality of the game gets better as more of them die because you have fewer people to just like bullshit react to things. On the whole, like, it's hard to stop myself from playing this game. I've had to, you know, force myself to put it down so I go and do stuff, because it is like reading a good comic book or manga, you know. Like, it ends up being paced like that, but like a lot of these visual novels, you know, I said the very same thing about Steins Gate. It's like, man, the first hours of this are fucking rough going, but then eventually you get invested, you know, and the pace either actually picks up or your tolerance for the pace, you know, kind of meets what's actually there, and it stops being something where you're just kind of bothered by it.
That sounds like a very backhanded compliment, but yeah.
I don't mean it to be, because I am having a good time with it. It's just, I mean, like, all of this ultimately boils down to, and I said this about DR2, I believe, and if I didn't, I probably should have, which is, it's more of this. If you were not interested in Danganronpa based on the description of the first game, you're probably not going to be interested in this.
Yeah.
You know,
I will have to say that one of my favorite little screenshots that I ever took of Danganronpa was Monokuma from the first game, where he's just like, stop being weird and go back to bed. That just needs to be like my phrase for everything. Just stop being weird and go back to bed wherever you are. I don't, just whatever.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I've been playing, outside of The Witcher 3, which thankfully I've gone through the bulk of.
Yay.
Any questions?
What's your favorite Gwent deck?
Never really engaged with Gwent.
What?
Oh,
that's
no.
Like, that's like half the reason to play The Witcher 3.
No, my eyes were on the prize for the story stuff.
He is deeply offended by this.
Yeah, you might be a good person to bring in, actually, for this. Neither Gary nor I really engage with Gwent, so we're trying to figure out, like, just not because it's like bad, but like for me, I just it's already a long enough game, and I'm kind of playing it to see as much of it as I can. I played enough Gwent to like really understand kind of what was going on, and then left it by the wayside.
Okay.
Yeah. that what that you screamed at me was the funniest thing.
And like literally playing, when I played The Witcher and I played Gwent, I'm like, oh, they like buried a game that's just as good as the game within the game. Like, that's amazing. Like,
yeah. It is a very good card game, but I was there for like cool Telltale stories and, you know, killing big monsters and shit.
Yeah, that's cool too.
Yeah. It's cool too.
I'm not trying to downplay the rest of The Witcher. They're both great.
Yeah. Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Now it is time for us to end the show. Thank you so much.
Is that our new segment?
It's been a while. It has been a very long time since I have ended this show. No, thank you very much for listening to this episode of The Level. Going to remind you again, tune in to Duckstream, the streaming event that we are doing next weekend as we're listening to this, December 8th, 9th, and 10th. It's going to be a good time. It's always been a good time. We are doing that in support of the Transactive Gender Center out of Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep. Cool. That's the big thing. Otherwise, you know the stuff that you can do. Leave us a rating or review on iTunes. Jala, I saw that you took exception to the fact that most of the reviews omitted your presence.
Yeah, I know. They did. Yeah. I'm not, like, mentioned whatsoever. It's always like, the dudes. Dude, no. There's a girl. There's been a girl since 2014, yeah, damn it. I've been around.
There's been a woman on the show for several years now. So, yeah. Please go leave a review.
We haven't had one since July.
I know, right? It's a little bit depressing. I would like to see that. Yeah. So I mean, like, I'm not guilting you into this, but you should feel bad if you don't. I don't see a reason to prolong this. So I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm still David Moneysmith on the internet.
I'm Jalachan in places.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkel on Twitch.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. I only have one, and as far as I am concerned, this might be the only one we need. SBN optional.
Oh, I knew when you were laughing your ass off that that was going to be like your decision for the episode title. So, like, you know, there's really not a point in having any other ones. However, I had a couple that I was really entertained by that I know one of which is definitely not going to be one.
Okay.
Shelf of tit flesh is absolutely fucking hilarious, but I know it's not going to be the episode title, but that's why I tweeted it, because it will live on in my Twitter forever. With the screenshot, so everybody can go look at my Twitter and go see the shelf of tit flesh.
Well, now.
And the other being my mana bars up here. Same conversation, but...
That's a very fertile conversation.
Oh, God, Cole.
What? No, like, it produced a lot of titles.
Mm-hmm.
Any more, Jala?
No.
Okay.
So I had a couple. I wish I knew anything about China. I'm a big fan of A Pretty Thing.
Okay.
And this would need to be cut down or something, but they're way more interesting once they're corpses.
I would do that as way more interesting as corpses.
Okay. Although I still kind of like, what was it, Espen optional?
Yeah. Okay. Ben?
I had Hey My Health Bar Is Up Here, I had Blackout Friday, and I had Espen optional as well.
I'm probably gonna put the thumb on the scale and say Espen optional.
Oh, I knew.
Sounds good to
me.
I
said that.
Yeah. Okay. As long as we're all okay with me acting unilaterally and extra judicially. Yeah, there we go.
As benevolent flesh malevolent dictator.
Yeah.
It is all
some form of levolent.
Yep. Who levolents the levolents. Yeah. Cool. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool.
Good to hear from you guys.
Yeah. It's been a while.
Yay. I know. Yeah. Been a bit.
Cool. Well, take care, everybody.
All right.
Night.
Talk to you guys in a bit.
Bye.
Peace, y'all.